is the NT Country Hour on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory.
G'day there, my name's Matt Brand. Welcome to the program. The Northern Territory's biggest bull sale has just wrapped up in Katherine. We will cross to the yards very soon to bring you all of the results, which I am told includes a new record top price for that sale. Also making news today is that cattle stations in the Barkly are set for some major increases to their council rates.
We're going to have a 35% increase this year, bring in the spooky music, 35% the next year, and bring in the horror music is 35% the year after.
A horror story unfolding in the Barkly. And tell me, if you're in the top end, did you feel an earthquake about 20 minutes ago? Here at the ABC, it certainly caused a rumble. Would love to hear your experience this afternoon. Did you feel a quake about 20 minutes or so ago? Our text number is 0487 99 1057. Here at the Country Hour, we're doing our best to get someone on from Geoscience Australia. At this early stage, it looks like a 6.4 magnitude earthquake near Timor-Leste. But yes, we'll do our best to bring you more details about that really soon. That text number again is 0487 99 1057. Now, Indonesian authorities are reporting that more than 20,000 head of livestock have now been infected by foot and mouth disease. And it's now been declared in 16 Indonesian provinces. We start today's Country Hour by heading to Jakarta, where a new biosecurity program has just been launched. Luke Bowen is from the NT's Department of Industry. He's also the former chief executive of the NT Cattlemen's Association. Luke, what can you tell us about this new program?
So this is an initiative of the Northern Territory Government, partnered with Northern Territory Industry, who have been very successful in establishing exchange programs with Indonesia, particularly in the cattle production side of things. So this program will be bringing six high-class, very impressive Indonesian students from the Faculty of Animal Science at Gajah Mada University in Yogyakarta down to the Northern Territory, starting in at the beginning of August for a three-month placement. And these young people will be working with our biosecurity officers and also with industry in the Northern Territory to build an understanding of the Australian biosecurity system, but also apply some of those principles and any new learnings to biosecurity management in Indonesia. And the program is a 360-degree program, so our biosecurity officers and members of industry will also then visit Indonesia at the end of the program to sort of make it a full 360-degree program.
And what's the aim of it, Luke?
Look, the aim of it is to a lot of our challenges and opportunity in our region, particularly Northern Australia and Indonesia, are very common. We have a long-standing relationship, trading relationship, that goes back many years in production of cattle and feedlotting of Australian cattle in Indonesia. This has been a very strong theme for the last 40 years, and so the relationship is very important. So the more we work together on issues of common opportunity and threat, the more that we can develop strategies to manage biosecurity between Indonesia and Australia, and particularly the Northern Territory and Northern Australia.
You were instrumental years ago in starting up the NT Cattlemen's Association's Pastoral Exchange Program. How does this one differ?
Well, really, it's partnering with that program. So the idea is that it uses the same principles. These are really fundamental grassroots principles about people-to-people links. That program has been extremely successful. In fact, a number of the professors and teachers at the university at Gajah Mada, who we are partnered with, in fact, went through the program from 2012 onwards. So they're providing a very important basis for the relationship and for the design and selection of the students for the program this year. So really that program has been fundamental in improving that relationship. And we're going to be partnering with that program to build the biosecurity aspects into the program going forward.
The foot and mouth disease outbreak in Indonesia right now is an urgent matter. How does this help?
Look, I think this is a long-term program. It's about building up, you know, greater understanding and capability both in Northern Australia and in Indonesia. The Australian government is working very closely with the Indonesian government on how to manage the current difficulties with foot and mouth and also lumpy skin in Indonesia. Our chief vet, Mark Shipp, is going to be coming through Indonesia next week, also with a deputy chief veterinary officer from Australia, to have further discussions. We are visiting at the moment with our chief veterinary officer, Dr. Sue Fitzpatrick, primarily to establish this pilot program this year with the Gajah Mada University, but also to gain an understanding of some of the challenges Indonesia are facing with managing the current biosecurity problems in Indonesia.
How scary is this threat of FMD, Luke Bowen?
Look, I think the clearly foot and mouth disease is a major concern worldwide. Indonesia has been free of foot and mouth since 1986, and it is a very, very large challenge for Indonesia because it's a very large country, many islands, many different areas where the cattle are produced across Indonesia. So this will have a major impact on Indonesian economy and Indonesian farmers. So we're very conscious of the difficulties and the real challenges this is for Indonesian farmers and Indonesia more generally. And certainly the cooperation that Australia is providing is a very positive thing for both the current challenges in Indonesia, but also understanding what it means for Australia as well, given our close proximity.
Also with you in Indonesia is the Territory's Chief Vet, Dr. Sue Fitzpatrick. Are you able to hand the phone over to Sue, please, Luke?
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Well, I am well. You've had a big week over in Indonesia. What is the latest news over there in terms of foot and mouth disease?
So the Australian Government Department of Ag, Water and Environment is leading the discussions with Indonesian government on the devastating foot and mouth disease and lumpy skin disease outbreak in Indonesia and any assistance measures that Australia can provide to support the response activity. At the moment, we are focused on building close relationships with the University of Gajah Mada through this biosecurity program and working with animal science students to strengthen their understanding of biosecurity and how it can be applied here in Indonesia, particularly the small farmers, to prevent these diseases and increase productivity.
Have you seen foot and mouth disease firsthand while you've been there this week? Have you seen cases?
No. So we've been in Yogyakarta with the university selecting the students. To date, that province is free of foot and mouth disease. But we have been to a one of the university affiliated farms. So we also visited a local market in Yogyakarta, and we did wear our PPE equipment. So Luke and I've seen
the photos. You look like you're in one of those, you know, outbreak disease movies. You're in the full gear.
Yeah, well, certainly the locals were entertained and taking photos and videos of us, but it was important as we travel around to ensure that we maintain our biosecurity. And we did visit the market to understand the trading systems to support the students when they do come out and do their placement in the territory and how those learnings can be applied back here in to improve biosecurity and particularly the production systems that they're going to work in. So while we were at the market, we certainly did see some established basic level biosecurity. They had the vehicles that were driving through a vehicle wash with spray and did check the disinfectant in that. They had the hand washing on entry for people. I met four veterinarians, so they were doing the inspections of the animals as they entered the markets.
What sort of stories are Indonesian vets telling you in that? Do they have confidence that Indonesia can stop the spread of this disease?
So in Yogyakarta, the veterinarians that I met work for Ministry of Agriculture. They were concerned about the disease, as the students and everyone is here, and looking to try and implement any biosecurity that can improve things. But they certainly are looking towards a vaccination for both lumpy skin disease and foot and mouth disease.
And just finally, I'm not sure if you've seen the article or not, Sue Fitzpatrick, but I think it's proving popular on Talkback Radio in Australia today. It's market analyst Simon Quilty, who was often on the Country Hour. He yes. is proposing at least a six-month ban on flights to Bali while this disease outbreak unfolds in Indonesia. What's your thoughts?
So I think tourism is particularly important to Bali. And I think that the Australian government will certainly work with the Indonesian government on disease control strategies. And vaccination is certainly a key strategy for Indonesia to roll out to protect those animals that currently aren't infected and to work towards an eradication program for Indonesia. Many of the tourists that visit Bali, you know, don't have any contact with the animals at all. They go there to enjoy the beach. And so I think certainly there needs to be a balance with tourism and a balance with risk mitigation. And there could be measures that Australian government put in place to manage those tourists that are travelling to Bali.
It's a very busy day for you. Thanks for sharing time for the Country Hour.
Thanks, Matt.
Dr. Sue Fitzpatrick, who is the Northern Territory's chief vet in Jakarta this afternoon, and we heard earlier from Luke Bowen from the NT's Department of Industry. And yes, I wonder what you make of this idea from analyst Simon Quilty, this idea to ban flights to Bali for at least 6 months. He has been quoted as saying that we have a problem on our doorstep. We need to think about it, not just put our head in the sand. And as a country, we seriously need to think about banning people going to Bali, as extreme as that sounds, is the quote from Simon Quilty, someone that we hear from on this program a lot. He's created plenty of discussion here, and I wonder what your thoughts are. 0487 99 1057. Should we ban flights to Bali for at least 6 months, while authorities try and get a handle on foot and mouth disease in Indonesia? What do you think? 0487 99 1057. Dan Fitzgerald's just come into the studio wearing his favourite Bintang singlet. No, he's not. But yeah, we put this out on Twitter, didn't we, Dan? And getting all types of responses.
It's already generating a bit of discussion, Matt. George says he thinks the idea would be uncommon sense to do so, but serious preventative action is needed. George says, he said, it will be carnage if foot and mouth disease gets into our industry for livestock producers and taxpayers. And given our huge population of feral pigs in northern Australia, he says it would take years to recover.
David says, I imagine Indonesia might be offended by a travel ban and this could create tension. However, not as much tension as an FMD outbreak in Australia. There's an enormous amount at stake for Australia and our overseas customers, says David.
Martin, he reckons it's not going to go down well with the Bondi crowd.
Be a lot of people in Darwin. They love going to Bali as well. And Jimmy says, really? People calling for a six-month ban when they whinged about a six-week suspension to the live cattle trade back in 2011. That is gold. Are they going to compensate the tourist industry, says Jimmy on Twitter. You might be want to share your thoughts. 0487 99 1057. Comments coming through about the earthquake that was felt in the top end about 30 minutes ago. Kay at Coolinga felt it. I've got a message from a friend in Kununurra who says they felt it over there in the ore irrigation scheme. Dan, you've been in contact with Geoscience Australia. We're hopeful of getting them on the radio soon, yes?
Yeah, we'll hopefully speak to somebody from Geoscience Australia before one.
Wonderful.
Hello, my name is Jihan Abdulani, and I am a PhD student for growing Australian native rice, and you are listening to Country Hour.
Should we ban flights to Bali? They only resumed out of Darwin earlier this month. Should we go and ban it? 0487 99 1057. Regarding foot and mouth disease, Val on the text says, what is happening on the ground to control FMD? We need a bit more than just chatting, says Val. Tom Dawkins is the chief executive of the NT Livestock Exporters Association, and he was on ABC News 24 this morning. Now, he wasn't asked for his views on banning flights to Bali. He wasn't asked that. But he was certainly keen to talk about the threat that tourists can pose when returning to Australia. Let's have a listen to Tom.
It's an animal disease, but like many things, it's certainly spread by humans and by organic matter, by soil. And so for Australia, especially as international travel has resumed, we're acutely aware of the risk for tourists coming back from Indonesia. We have extremely good biosecurity programs and protections in place in Australia. Foot and mouth disease is quite widespread across the world, and it's in other parts of that region and elsewhere. So it's something that we have successfully combated in the past, but it's just so important that travellers do their due diligence when they're returning to Australia on their declarations, and they make sure that they're not bringing any foreign matter back in with them.
And Tom, finally, the industry is saying if foot and mouth did get into Australian livestock, it could cost $100 billion. That's a huge figure. Is that how you see the potential situation?
The red meat industry has never been worth more. We've got a scenario globally where we've got protein inflation and red meat inflation. So the animals that we're working with are more valuable than ever before. The animals that my members send to our feedlot customers in Indonesia are worth more than ever before. So the cost of an incursion and the measures that we would take here in Australia to control the spread and to resume our disease-free status would be an astronomical cost, and that's why we're doing everything. And I am confident that at an industry and government level, we are responding to this emergency. And I just ask that anyone that's travelling or anyone that may be thinking about receiving something in the post from a friend overseas to really think about the potential implications of some foreign objects that may have a disease risk reaching Australia.
That's Tom Dawkins, the Chief Executive of the Northern Territory Livestock Exporters Association, on ABC News 24 earlier this morning. Meat analyst Simon Quilty has put it out there. Should Australia ban flights to Bali for at least 6 months while authorities try and get a handle on the foot and mouth disease outbreak in Indonesia? On the text 0487 99 1057, Des at the Little Roper Stock Camp. G'day, Des. He says, no chance of a ban to Bali. Cattlemen and women don't matter when compared to idiots having a cheap holiday, reckons Des. Support for our meat industry should be a priority. Another message here that says, definitely 6 month travel ban or until FMD is eradicated. This disease would destroy Australia's livestock industry. Would you support a ban on flights to Bali? 0487 99 1057. The text here at the Country Hour. It is 10 to 1. About, 40 minutes ago, certainly in Darwin where I am, the ground started to shake. What caused that? Well, this afternoon we're joined by Trevor Allen, who is a senior seismologist with Geoscience Australia. Really appreciate your time this afternoon. Trevor, tell us what's happened.
Yeah, thanks, Matt. So, as you say, a little after 12 p.m. local time, there was a magnitude 6.4 earthquake just up near Timor-Leste. And this earthquake appears to have been fairly extensively felt up in the top end. So at Geoscience Australia, we have a felt report system, and to date, we've received almost 500 felt reports from the community.
Wow.
Telling us that they've felt the earthquake in the top end region.
How far south are the reports coming in?
So we're starting to get reports. They're mostly around the Darwin area, but there are a couple of reports coming through from Karratha in Western Australia as well.
Wow.
And down around the Katherine region too.
This quake, did it happen at sea or there on land at Timor-Leste?
Yeah, so the earthquake appears to have occurred just offshore near Timor-Leste. So given it's a relatively small earthquake, so we wouldn't have expected it to have triggered a tsunami. Nevertheless, it looks as if the ground shaking within Timor-Leste itself was relatively strong. So we'll be awaiting reports coming out of Timor-Leste to see whether there was any damage associated with this earthquake. But in general, we would expect to see an earthquake of this magnitude or potentially even larger roughly every year in that region.
Yeah, let's hope everyone is okay there in Timor. And have we mentioned the magnitude?
Yes, so it was a magnitude 6.4 earthquake.
6.4, okay. No worries. All righty then. Really appreciate your time this afternoon, Trevor. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. Thanks, Matt.
Trevor Allen there at Geoscience Australia. 6.4 magnitude earthquake in the Timor region. Let's hope everyone's okay there. I'm sure more information will come through as the afternoon moves on, and you'll hear all about it right here on your ABC. It is 9 to 1. Oh, big old jet airliner, 'cause it's here that I got to stay. Oh, big old Steve Miller Band on a Friday afternoon. Don't carry me too far. Should Australia ban flights to Bali? Plenty of texts coming through. Just want to quickly share with you some breaking news that's coming out of the Kimberley this afternoon. ABC News' Aaron Park reporting that emergency crews are flying out to the horizontal waterfalls. The reports are that up to a dozen people have been injured in a boat capsized there in the fast-moving waters of the horizontal falls. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about that this afternoon. Not good, not good at all. 5 to 1, you are tuned into the Country Hour. Now, rates for cattle stations in the Barkly Regional Council will go up 35% next financial year and another 35% on top of that the year after. Mining lease rates will also go up. The Mayor, Jeff McLaughlin, says stations in the Barkly are already paying much lower rates than those just across the border.
What would happen if we've got one pastoral company on the border of Queensland? So on our side of the border, that pastoral company pays about $11,000 in rates. On the other side of the border, they're paying $110,000 in rates to Queensland. So for a very long time, mining and pastoralists have not had the increases, CPI and all of that. So in reality, what's happening, and this is through our Minister for Local Government, Chancey Paik, who we've been working very hard with, is we're going to have a 35% increase this year, bring in the spooky music, 35% the next year, and bring in the horror music is 35% the year after. But in reality, what's going to happen is just for pastoral, we would probably go in 3 years' time from $11,000 to $39,000 of income from rateable. Yeah,
and that's for an average Barkly station, is it?
Yeah, it's an average Barkly station. But even in 3 years after the horror music and the spooky music, they are still well, well, well behind what pastoralists would be paying in Queensland Western Australia or South Australia.
Of course, if I've got a station and I'm going, well, Mayor Jeff McLaughlin, what services do you deliver to me which is going to make it worthwhile for me to be paying a rate like that? And I know we can compare it to WA or to Queensland, and it's a very different situation, but
yep.
do we just see rates as just purely a land tax and not anything about delivery of services?
Well, we have the largest area of graded roads in Australia, if not, anywhere. Just a greater road, it's about $1,200 for two scrapes a year, and that's going up as well with the price of fuel. Our pastoralists come into town, they use our facilities, we have a pool for them to use, we have roads, we even have cowboys come in to do a bit of fitness here and there. They use our sporting facilities. So it's either, you know, everyone uses it. We have all our service centres. We have airstrips. We have all of these things that need to be maintained. And with a massive depreciation value coming up as well, we've got to stay on top of this because, yeah.
Do you reckon the Cattlemen's Association, do they know this is coming? Because this is the first I've heard of it today, about the 35% increase plus 35% the year after. Are they aware of this, let's call it a spike, because it's going to be more than they're used to. Have they been consulted?
I believe that the Northern Territory Government have been consulting with the Cattlemen's Association and the mining. So that's where it's at. Mm. And, I mean, I'm talking, I've got an old lady who's a retired lady in her house. She's paying more rates than big, giant corporations.
That's Jeff McLaughlin, Mayor of the Barkly Regional Council, speaking there to Stuart Brash. Our question on the Country Hour this afternoon is, should Australia ban flights to Bali as authorities over in Indonesia try and get a handle on the foot and mouth disease outbreak? Peter gave us a call and says it's logical to ban direct flights from Bali, but maybe not logical to ban indirect flights given how long FMD would last on clothing, etc. And a message here from Bart, who says, yep, stop the flights and create the million-dollar pig competition on NT Power and Water Corp land to reduce the spread from that country to adjacent pastoral properties via roaming wild pigs, says Bart from NT Field and Game. We've still got plenty to come in the second half, including a trip to Katherine to find out how things went this morning at the Northern Territory's biggest bull sale. But now it's news time on your ABC, 1 o'clock.
Hello, my name is Chris Tazolis. I'm the Managing Director of Verdant Minerals, the owner of the Amaru Phosphate Project on Amaru Station, south of Tennant Creek, and you're listening to The Country Hour.
The territory's biggest bull sale was held in Katherine this morning. There's a bit of the action for you. 170 bulls up for offer there in Katherine. It's all wrapped up. She's all done and dusted now, so in a moment on the Country Hour, we will be bringing you the results. And I've been told that a record was broken. A record's been broken in K-Town there at the bull sale. So I'll be bringing you that soon. And we'll also find out how conditions are shaping up for the Katherine camp draft that is getting underway this afternoon. It's probably already started, has it, Dan? Yeah, if all going to plan, the camp draft is underway. It's a busy, busy day in Katherine. Let's go to the Weather Bureau first. Rebecca Patrick is there this afternoon. Beck, the good folk at the Bureau, do you feel that shake, what, about an hour ago?
Yeah, it was just after midday. Things were certainly shaking in the Bureau office as well. So, yeah, bit of excitement.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've been told by Geoscience Australia, 6.4 magnitude in the Timor region. And Trevor from Geoscience Australia told us that they're getting reports coming from as far away as Karratha. In terms of people reporting a shake. So that's pretty decent.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it? We did get in contact with our observers out at Gove and also Alice Springs, and neither of them had felt it. But, I guess it perhaps the northern parts of WA might have got a bit of the tremor as well.
And no tsunami threat. Is that still the information you're getting there at the Bureau?
Yeah, that's right. So, the Bureau works with Geoscience Australia with our joint Australian Tsunami Warning Service and have determined that it is a no tsunami threat to the Australian continent.
Now, the weekend ahead for the Northern Territory weather-wise, what's the report?
For the weekend, across the top end, we are seeing some drier air across the top end today, and that should linger tomorrow, but starting to see a little bit of moisture returning from Sunday. It's just a little bit of a weak surge that's moved across for today and tomorrow, but that's starting to ease off from Sunday, and certainly next week as well. We'll see more humid conditions and even potentially showers over western parts of the top end, so a little bit unseasonal.
June showers in the top end, my goodness.
Yeah, so we'll see how that plays out, but that is linked to a system that's moving through West Australia and into the Territory. Next week, we've got a cloud band potentially developing across the weekend in the Lasseter district. So fairly insignificant over the weekend, but potentially deepening during next week, and could see some rainfall around the middle of next week, particularly over, at this stage, it's looking like the Tanami district, also into the Lasseter and western parts of the Simpson district. Not so sure about the Barkly at this stage, but that's an area we'll be keeping an eye on.
Yeah, okay then. Right, have we talked about potential rainfall figures for Central Australia next week?
At this stage, it's still a little bit of uncertainty associated with that. There's a fair bit of variability in what we're seeing in terms of the guidance, but definitely there will be some rainfall. Some of our guidance is saying 10 millimetres, some are saying more than that. Mm-hmm. So, definitely watch this space, and as it gets closer, we'll tidy up those numbers for you.
And the weekend ahead for fishos, what can you tell them?
So on the coastal waters at the moment, there's a little bit of wind out there, particularly in the Gulf of Carpentaria, where we have seen some winds getting up to about 25 knots, but that should be easing back a little bit across the weekend. Across the north coast of the top end, we are seeing those fresh winds expected to be about 15 to 20 knots east to southeasterlies. Still a little bit lighter over the western sides of the top end. Again, easing off over the weekend, we'll probably be looking more about 10 to 15 knots. In the harbour today, we might be seeing those winds getting up to about 10 to 15 knots today, but easing off to about 10 knots across the weekend, but generally easterly flow.
Okay, thanks for your time this afternoon, Beck.
No worries. Thanks, Matt.
Rebecca Patrick there at the Weather Bureau. It's 10 past one and you are tuned into the Country Hour. Foot and mouth disease is spreading through Indonesia. And as we've told you, market analyst Simon Quilty has floated the idea of banning flights to Bali for at least 6 months while authorities try and get on top of the situation there in Indonesia. We've asked for your thoughts on that. Joe in Wagaman says there's no point of closing flights to Bali and still be open to other areas. Another message here says, I think the chief vet of the Northern Territory is wrong. Tourists don't just go to the beach in Bali. They also go up into the cooler mountain regions and up into the villages that have farm animals. Be prudent to reduce travel, says this person, who also says they're not a vet, but just saying, on 0487 99 1057. And Tim out at Inverell Bay, good to hear from you, Tim, on the text, says he was listening to the ABC Overnights program the other day. The topic was the Labor Party's stance on the live sheep export trade. And Tim says, after listening to all of the Southerners and their opinions, it was quite obvious that foot and mouth and lumpy skin disease was not on their radar, and it was not even mentioned. It would be good for them to be educated on the dire predicament that we're in, reckons Tim on 0487 99 1057. Is it time to pack away the Bintang singlet and ban flights to Bali? You can join the conversation this afternoon. 0487 99 1057.
Tales from the Tinny.
Threw the cast net out to get bait, got stuck in a rock. So what did I do?
You jumped in.
Thank you. Can't let a good net go to waste. So So, again, there's a question of safety versus catching the big one. Do you know what I mean? Is that dedication or stupidity? I don't know.
Look at it. There's a fine balance there. I'm not sure which side of the ledger you actually fall on, but I've got my suspicions.
Subscribe to the podcast or reel it in anytime you like on the ABC Listen app.
7,500, the territory's biggest bull sale was held in Katherine this morning. 170 bulls going under the hammer. We are joined this afternoon by our Katherine reporter, Max Rolley. How did it all go, Max?
Yeah, g'day, Matt. So it's a breezy day down here in Katherine, and people have come in from all over outside of town. So there's people from, you know, the local region, Douglas Daly, Sturt Plateau and the Barkly, but also people all the way up from Alice Springs and also from Mount Isa. And it's been a few records broken today, Matt.
Yes, run us through them.
Yeah, so top price bull, $28,000. That's a new record. Also, the gross sale was over $1 million this year for the first time.
Wow.
And the average was around almost 6,600. So all of those figures are records for the Ponderosa Brahman sale here in Katherine.
Gee, yeah. Well done to all of the organisers there, grossing more than $1 million. That is unbelievable. Who forked out $28,000?
That was Laura and Ian Hoare from Ferguson River Station, just near Katherine here. Yeah, they forked out the $28,000. And you'll hear more about that on Monday. But, yeah, it's certainly been a big day, and some very happy sellers here today, no doubt. The stakes are sizzling. You know, the auctioneers were very eager, and there was some very lively bidding, Matt. I'm joined by Michael Smith, the Elders Stud Stock Manager. Thanks for joining me today, Michael.
No troubles at all.
How'd the sale go?
Oh, look, outstanding. As you mentioned, records all round. Record gross, record average, and a new record top price. And, look, the interest was phenomenal. A big spread, geographic spread on the purchases. East to Mount Isa, south to Alice Springs. Good local support and up into that Douglas Daly region as well.
What kinds of bulls were selling well today?
Oh, look, there's a big demand on pole genetics. You know, we're seeing it all the time in this stud seed stock business. A strong demand for pole cattle again today. And like I say, it's been ongoing and gaining momentum over the course of the last sort of 3 or 4 years, gradually more and more. And not only in the Brahman breed, but in a lot of other breeds of cattle that we market throughout the year.
Right, so that's a trend you've certainly been seeing, and people willing to fork out a bit more for those as well?
Yeah, certainly, yeah. Those poly cattle are definitely making a premium, yeah, for sure.
And what does today's sale, all these records broken, what does that tell you about the territory's cattle market at the moment?
Look, it's exhibited the fact that there's, you know, a tremendous amount of confidence in the industry and the business itself, albeit the season, you know, not the best. This Katherine region sort of missed out on its traditional wet to a great extent, but look, just the general confidence in the marketing in where the markets are, the outlook for where our industry is, and in a lot of areas, you know, somewhat of a herd rebuilding phase that's starting to take place, and look, it's all very positive from where we sit just at the moment. You know, we never know what's around the corner. We haven't got a crystal ball, but just at the moment and the near to medium term future, it all looks pretty positive.
And did you expect this coming into today? There, we obviously know that there have been good prices and good market, but did you expect to see prices quite this high?
No, it's exceeded everyone's expectations. The three vendors involved in today's sale, they're all very, very, very happy with the outcome. It's exceeded their expectations. Us as agents are the same. It's great to see, particularly our Queensland vendors. They've bought these cattle a long way. They've stuck to this sale for a long time through thick and thin, and we've had some pretty tough days here in years gone by. And also our local vendors, Paul and Debbie, they do a tremendous job with the article they turn out. So it's great. It's great to see that the buoyancy in the industry and the positivity starting to flow through and into the pockets of these seed stock producers as well. So it's really great to see that flow all the way through down the line.
And do you think, expect that we can see this kind of prices next year or in the years to come?
Oh, look, we always hope to you know, improve on our results from year to year. It doesn't always happen that way. You know, it's an industry where we're governed a lot by the weather, you know, market conditions, you know, demand, supply. So all those things come in, but look, it'll be great. You know, this sale's been going for 22 years now, and I've been coming up here for about the last 4 years or so, and each year over the last 4 years, the results have been, you know, the sale's been growing, the results have been better each year. So let's hoping, and like I say, the vendors are doing a great job and really turning out a really good article for people to come and buy, and the interest in the number of people, the number of registered buyers and the interest that we had here today, certainly the best that we've ever seen. We've had over 30 registered buyers here today, and normally this sale, if you get sort of, you know, 15, 12, 15, 16, 18 registered buyers, that's normally about where we normally sit. So we've nearly effectively doubled the number of registered buyers that we've had attend the sale today.
And are you seeing demand from any new or different regions then?
Oh, not really. Like, it's always been great support out of this local immediate Katherine area and up into that Douglas Daly. And one operator from Alice Springs today, they used to do it. They've bought a small number of bulls in the past sort of by remote, but they made the trek up themselves this year, did the job, and they were very strong on those pole grey Brahman cattle they were. And a bit of interest from a bit further east into that Mount Isa country, as we mentioned before. So, you know, the sale starting to draw people from a greater and a much wider area than just this immediate Katherine area.
Well, thanks for your time today, Michael. Really appreciate it.
No troubles. Thanks for the opportunity. Great to be able to contribute.
Michael Smith there, the Elders Stud Stock Manager here in Katherine. Matt, and yeah, there's plenty happening in Katherine, so the bull sale's just wrapped up. You might be able to hear a bit, some bulls being moved around, some gates opening, closing, and it's wrapping up here, but it's actually the camp draft also in Katherine tonight, and so a big weekend ahead.
Yeah, camp drafting, bull sales, the dry season kicking into gear. Is Katherine feeling busy at the moment?
It certainly is, yeah, it really is. Lots of caravans coming through as well, right. And the Stuart Highways, you know, really start to notice it getting busier at this time of year, yeah.
Yeah, well, I'll let you go to the camp draft. Thanks for your time, Max.
Thanks, Matt. Cheers.
Hello, this is Di from Denison. We're 320 kilometres from Alice Springs in the Tanami region, and you're listening to Country Hour.
There is a lot going on, isn't there? You'll hear more from the Katherine Camp Draft in just a moment. A little reminder for the diary. First Noonamar Rodeo of the Year is on tomorrow night. There'll be bull riding, saddle broncs, freestyle motocross, a live band. It all kicks off at 6 p.m. and I will eat my hat. I won't even put sauce on it. I'll just eat it straight if this song doesn't get aired tomorrow night at Noonamar. That'll get played tomorrow night at Noonamar. You can bet your hat on it. The feature bull tomorrow night is Vengeance. They'll get a good crowd there at Noonie. They really will. The other big event on this weekend is the Katherine Australian Stockhorse Society Camp Draft. Action's getting underway this afternoon. This camp draft has pulled a big crowd of competitors, more than 900 nominations, thank you very much. The prize money in the open draft alone is sitting at $20,000. There's some good money to be won in K-Town. Todd Trengrove is the committee member. He had a chat to Hugo Rickard-Bell about the draft earlier this morning.
The cattle body from Newcastle Waters and Carlton Hill Station over in the west unloaded last night real nice. Everything about them is good. They're a good line of steers. They usually are. They donate cattle every year. So we're expecting to see some pretty good runs out of them this weekend. Got good cover on them. And the cattle will make the event this year. Yeah, they are good cattle.
What do you reckon? Is the arena set up for, you know, a bit of your faster moving horse, or do you reckon it'll all be decided in the camp?
No, mate, it'll be decided outside. Yeah, the judges have set up a real nice course there, tight and fast it should be. So you've always got to have your good points in the yard to get you started. Helps out a lot. So yeah.
How many nominations this year, Todd?
Mate, we ended up with 1,100 first round noms when the nominations opened. But we have had a few scratchings where we're back to 980 first round runs now, which is up probably about 200, 250 from last year. So yeah, it's got quite a crowd here. Yeah, we ran a pretty good event last year, and it's obviously paid dividends. People have decided to come.
Is it a pretty even split across the, across the standards? Like, are you seeing plenty of new riders coming in?
Yeah, mate, we've got a lot of stations have come in this year, bought their stock camp in. A lot of faces that we haven't seen before, young fellas, young ringers coming up from down south and that sort of thing. So, yeah, mate, but we've still got your older competitors here that could cut it with just about the best in the country here. So, yeah, so it'll be a good spectacle this weekend.
Well, what sort of prize money are we looking at here, Todd?
So for the Open, we've put $20,000 up for the Open. Yeah, so it's worth the final will be worth $15,000. So it'll be $2,500 per round up for grabs, and then the final, it's $15,000. So the winner will walk away with a pretty good check, and with the cutout also, we put there's $1,000 up for the cutout this year as well. So yeah.
Wow, there you go. And so, I mean, I guess with that sort of prize money, I can only assume there's a pretty good party on tomorrow night. Tell me, what's on the cards for tomorrow?
Tomorrow we've got, like I said, the second round of the Open. Then we'll go on to all the kids during the day, followed by the encouragement draft field for your drafters that have never won anything. And then tomorrow night from 7 o'clock, that's when the party will start, mate. Maiden final. We'll do a grand entry for all the Open finalists. And it's free entry for anyone who wants to come down. There's full bar and canteen facilities here all weekend. But, free entry, bring a rug, come and sit on the hill and watch some good camp drafting, hopefully.
That is Todd Trengrove from the Catherine Ash Camp Draft Committee, speaking to Hugo Rickard-Bell. Also on in Catherine tonight is the Dreaming Under the Stars event. It's an evening at the Catherine Showgrounds supporting the charity Dolly's Dream. There'll be a live band, auctions and door prizes, all proceeds going towards Dolly's Dream. Now, this week in the Northern Territory, a gas company gave notice to Tenenbrini Station east of Daly Waters that it would be entering the property to start exploration, even though the cattle producers there are dead against the project and dead against fracking. The NT Civil Administrative Tribunal ordered the owners to allow the gas company access after negotiations between the two parties broke down. This is a first for the emerging gas industry there in the Beetaloo. Andrew Stubbs is the operations manager for Rallon Australia and the owner of Tenenbrini.
Yeah, this is a real concern to us because, to my understanding, an agreement is when two parties come together. They negotiate, they consult with each other, they explain each other's businesses, and you come to an amicable agreement, which is then agreed by both parties and signed off on. But what's happened here, we've been forced into a situation which is, to us, is not agreement at all. This has been forced upon us by the judicial, the government, and we're not happy with that decision whatsoever.
That's Andrew Stubbs from Rallon Australia. Now, on Monday's Country Hour, we will take you to Tenenbrini Station and hear how Rallon is teaming up with traditional owners in the Beetaloo Basin as a gas company enters the property. That's Monday's program. We'll be there at Tenenbrini. I hope you can join us for that. So many great events on in the Northern Territory this weekend. Make sure you get out and amongst it. And in the meantime, keep it rural.